The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
In our reflection this morning, I chose to talk about craving or attachment because I think it's such an important hindrance to our peace of mind and to our happiness. And somehow we think that if we get a certain thing or we have a particular experience, we will really be happy, profoundly happy. Or maybe in conversation, we have the opposite experience. Maybe we think, this person doesn't like me, or this person doesn't like what I said, or this person doesn't approve of how I look. And then, without thinking about it, we might say, oh, I'm not valued, which is our own interpretation. And then we want to contradict them, maybe. And who knows, we might get into arguing about an idea where that's not the issue for us at all. So attachment also involves aversion. We can get attached to our idea of ourselves. I had that experience recently when someone asked me to do something and I said no, and I was really upset. And it took me a long time to figure out I was worried because it wasn't my idea of myself. And our ideas are just something we make up, and we know we change them pretty often, but they can have a grip, and we can have feelings that go along with them. So it's good to recognize when we're having an attachment or an aversion based on our ideas. It's hard to recognize sometimes because what we think seems normal to us, you know, this is the way it is, right? Maybe, maybe not. There's a little book that Pema Chodron wrote called Practicing Peace in Time of War. And that's the one I picked up in order to prepare remarks for today. And I thought I'd be thinking about war, but it ended up I really selected thoughts about attachment. And she says, in Tibetan, there is a word that points to the root cause of aggression, the root cause also of craving. It points to a familiar experience that is the root of all conflict, oppression, and greed. The word is shenpa. I think of shenpa as getting hooked. Another definition used by Zigar Khandrul Rinpoche is the charge. The charge behind our thoughts and words and actions. The charge behind like and don't like. Here's an everyday example, she says. Someone criticizes you. She criticizes your work or your appearance or your child. In moments like that, what is it you feel? That sticky feeling is shenpa, and it comes along with a very seductive urge to do something. There's a tightening that rapidly spirals into mentally blaming this person or wanting revenge or blaming yourself. Then you speak or act. The charge behind the tightening, behind the urge, behind the storyline or action is shenpa. Pema adds, if you catch shenpa early enough, it's very workable. You can acknowledge that it's happening and abide with the experience of being triggered, the experience of urge, the experience of wanting to move. It's like experiencing the yearning to scratch an itch, and generally we find it irresistible. Nevertheless, we can practice patience with that fidgety feeling and hold our seat. I'm thinking it's not very flattering to think of ourselves as a fish about to bite a hook in the water, you know, especially with a worm on it, or as feeling an electrical charge or sudden energy. I did think that recently I experienced Shenpa when I was watching part of the recent congressional hearings on the January 6th events at the nation's capital. And for me, that during that time, that went over a few days, I didn't watch all of it, Shenpa showed up as judgments and feelings and a desire for consequences. I didn't need to do anything, but I was hooked. So what shall we do when we feel ourselves reacting quickly and strongly, and we don't know whether we want to say or do something? Pema Chodron has an answer. The best way to develop our ability to stay fully present with Shenpa is in meditation. This is where we can train in not getting swept away. Meditation teaches us how to open and relax with whatever arises, without picking and choosing. It teaches us to experience the uneasiness and the urge fully, and to interrupt the momentum that usually follows. We do this by not following after the thoughts and learning to return again and again to the present moment. We train in sitting still with the itch of Shenpa and with our craving to scratch. We label our storylines thinking and let them dissolve. And we come back to right now, even when right now doesn't feel so great. This is how we learn patience and how we learn to interrupt the chain reaction of habitual responses that otherwise will rule our lives. So she says, simply by recognizing what's happening, we can nip oppression or craving in the bud. As we become more familiar with doing this, our wisdom becomes a stronger force than Shenpa. That in itself has the power to stop the chain reaction. One method of doing this is to bring your awareness to your breath, strengthening your ability to be there openly and with curiosity. We could think of this process in terms of the four R's, she says. Recognizing the Shenpa, refraining from scratching, relaxing with the underlying urge to scratch, and then resolving to interrupt the momentum like this for the rest of our lives. So that's recognize, refrain, relax, and resolve. She concludes, if we can learn to relax in the place where the urge is strong, we will get a bigger perspective on what's happening. We might come to see that there are 2 billion kinds of itch and 7 quadrillion types of scratching. But we just call the whole thing Shenpa. Oh, good. Time for comments. We have 5 minutes. What do you think? Or if you want to ask a question, which I probably can't answer. Who has a thought? A feeling? An action? Yeah, we can use the microphone, but Paul, Nancy, thank you.
Does that sound on? Yeah, yes. Would you equate Shenpa then with dukkha? The same as dukkha?
Okay, repeat your last word, please.
Senpa equals dukkha.
Dukkha. My personal thing is, Senpa is really uncomfortable. So it's suffering. It's not the only kind. I would. What about you? What do you think?
It sounds like dukkha to me. The same. I have another sort of more personal question about meditation and if your experience of prayer and meditation are different or the same.
Okay, I'm sorry, I missed your thing about the meditation. Just could you increase your volume a little? Thank you.
Is your experience with prayer and with meditation the same or different?
Good grief. Is my experience of prayer and meditation the same or different? I use the definition of meditation that we all use and have in common. I don't find an agreed-upon definition of prayer. To me, in my experience as a Catholic, prayer involves belief in God, or there are so many ways to imagine God, and I really like feeling very free that any image we have of God can't possibly be right. So Monday we can have this one and Tuesday that one and not take it seriously as accurately true. So for me, the prayer is an interaction. It might be with a person. It might be with the Judeo-Christian image of God as we find in scriptures. If you've looked at scriptures with this question, you notice there's a lot of variety in descriptions of God. And I hear it in the, you know, scripture passages used at Mass every day. So I just have to say, I'd be kind of loose with that.
Thank you.
Someone else. Okay, we all now know a Tibetan word, and nobody else will know it. It's a secret word. Okay, we can complete our time together, and we all know.